Hi, ciao, this is Giuseppe Camuncoli, aka Camo from Italy, and you're listening to the Amazing Spider Talk.
Welcome to the Amazing Spider Talk. I am your co-host, Mark Giannacchio, from the Chasing Amazing blog. And if you're confused by the fact that I am opening the show and not our other fearless co-host, Dan Gavazdin, it's because I am flying solo today for a very special episode of Amazing Spider Talk and our amazing friends. In this episode, I will be speaking to Spider-Man artist Giuseppe Camuncoli, or Camo. I was fortunate enough to have met Camo at New York Comic Con in early October, and after a little bit of back and forth, we finally figured out a time to talk. He was actually on the road at a comic event in Argentina. Camo is originally from Italy and still lives there. So we dealt with some time zone differences, some other logistical challenges, but we're here, and it's a great interview, and we talk about Camo's origins and getting into the industry and his first Spider-Man stories and, of course, his current work with Superior Spider-Man and Spider-Verse. So get yourselves ready and check in and listen to this great interview with Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends, Iceman and Firestar.
Hey, this is Mark Giannacchio with the Amazing Spider Talk, and we got a very special guest today. We have Giuseppe Camuncoli, who was gracious enough to let us talk to him on the road. I know he's traveling. I believe you're in Argentina right now, right, Giuseppe?
Yeah, right. I'm here in Buenos Aires, and I will be heading back home tomorrow, actually.
Excellent. Well, you know, for those of you who don't know, Giuseppe, of course, has been an artist on various Spider-Man series for quite a while now. I know he really started as part of the regular rotation with Amazing Spider-Man with Dan Slott in 2011. Then became part of the Superior Spider-Man rotation, and he's done a couple of issues of the rebooted Amazing Spider-Man, and is going to be part of the Great Spider-Verse series that we're in the midst of. So again, Giuseppe, thank you so much for taking your time out.
You're more than welcome, Mark. Thank you for calling me. Oh, it's a pleasure.
My pleasure too. I did want to ask you. I mean, now Giuseppe, you grew up overseas, right, in Italy?
Yeah, I still live in Italy. Grew up and lived in Italy for all my life.
So how did you become interested in comic books living overseas? And like, what were some of the first superhero books that you read? I mean, did you read the Marvel and DC characters that we're all familiar with here in the States, or did you have your own multiverse hero, so to speak?
No, I grew up reading mostly Marvel comics because I was born in 75, and like, around the time when I was about, you know, able to read, I was already familiar with comics because my father used to collect an Italian comic book, a Western comic called Tex, which is pretty popular over here in Italy. And I was already familiar with that, but it's black and white comics, really good one, like long tradition. But and then I discovered superheroes. And in the early 80s in Italy, we only had like the end of the golden age of comics of this publisher called Editoriale Cono, was the first one in the 70s to introduce the Marvel Universe in Italy. And the publishing house went down, and so like we only got a glimpse of like the last remnants of the publishing curse of the publishing house. But and we had no DC at the time. We had it earlier, and we got it afterwards, and we still have it now. But when I was a kid, it was mostly Marvel Comics. And of course, I would go to the library because I was interested in comics, so I could read any comic, European, French, Italian, American, mostly superheroes. But then I found out about DC Comics because they had books in my library in my hometown. And I was like, a very voracious reader, wouldn't give up, like I would read all of them. So it's, but again, like the most comics that I could find for superheroes were Marvel comics. So I grew up reading mostly Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, all of them, basically. And I have no, you know, complete collections because like every week my family allowed me to buy a comic per week. So I could choose, but, you know, every comic there was like a comic that I would love. And, you know, so there's no complete collections that I have because like a week was Spider-Man and the other week was Fantastic Four and then it was Thor and then it was Iron Man, then Daredevil. So, you know. That kind of thing.
Growing up, I would go. There was a corner store across the street from the church that I would go to with my father, and he would, you know, give me every week a dollar. And after, you know, I guess the comic was my prize for sitting through church for an hour. And it was, you know, let's go to the candy store. He'd pick up a newspaper, and I would, you know, get whatever comic I can get for a dollar off the spinner rack. And if there was a special edition, you know, comic that was more than a dollar, I'd have to you know, see if he'd throw me the extra 50 cents or something to make up for it. So who were some of your artistic influences you know, when you were kind of honing your craft?
Well, when I was a kid, I told, like, I basically read everything and also a lot, watched a lot of cartoons, like Japanese cartoons. So like I guess that it's a little bit of everything. Like from Hugo Pratt to Mabius, talking about comic creators from Europe, and then later on, like Japanese artists too. But like when I was a kid, like the, you know, I was mostly into the classics, you know, like Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Joe Romita Sr., Gene Colan, who was like great. I was a great fan, big fan of Gene Colan, George Tasca, you know. But then again, wave after wave, when they started, you know, publishing again comics in Italy, then I found out about John Byrne and I loved it. Mike Golden, you know, Barry Windsor-Smith, you know, all of them. And then, but probably the biggest influences I had, like when I was a kid, and, you know, wasn't really, I've always been drawing, but at the time I wasn't really following any course or career about comic. It was just like drawing. But I think that Frank Miller and Jim Lee were my biggest influences. Well, were probably the two artists that mostly shaped my style, what is now my style. Frank Miller, when I found out about Dark Knight Returns, like that completely, you know, revolutionized the way I was looking comics. And of course there were Watchmen and V for Vendetta, and it was like about that time when I found out about those comics. It was the early 90s, I think, in Italy. Got it a little bit later than you, but but Dark Knight, there was no way back from there, you know, like that nasty, you know, depiction of Bruce Wayne, an old gritty, grim and gritty, right? But there was a force, a power in those drawings that I kind of paired that with Hugo Pratt and Jim Lee's, you know, another force of nature, you know, like the details and the anatomy and the action and everything. So it's a blend. And, you know, like, I keep on evolving. Like, my style is always like evolving. I'm now, you know, I've been working for the American market since the end of 2000, and it's quite a few years, but I still feel like I'm constantly changing, you know, like I see a new artist that I like, and maybe something inadvertently influences what I do, you know. But yeah, I would say that those guys were probably, well, all of them, but probably those two guys were the ones that influenced me the most.
So, you know, I was going to ask you this a little later in the conversation, but I'll jump right to it. You know, you mentioned Frank Miller, and of course, a lot of your Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man work was inked by Klaus Janson, who of course worked with Frank on that. So what was that like for you? I mean, that kind of had to be like, that had to be crazy for you, right? To be inked by Klaus.
It was a dream come true. Like, it was like probably a couple of years that I had tried to get Klaus ink something of mine, like even a cover or anything, because I'm a big fan of his work, both as an artist, as an inker. And And when Steve Wecker, at the time the editor of Spider-Man, offered me to jump on Spider-Man, I was a little unsure about it because, like, I had done so many sketches of Spider-Man at shows that I was, like, afraid that, you know, I was fed up with the character, like, too many webs, too many, you know, details to draw, and too many skyscrapers. But I asked him if I could get Klaus Jensen to ink my pages, and he made it happen. And that made me, you know, first of all, very confident that if I would screw up anything, he would be able to, you know, fix it, you know, because he's a master. And secondly, like, I'm very happy to get the chance to work with Klaus. And that's when I got that email, when Steve told me that Klaus was interested and was doing it, he forced me to, you know, forced me to recognize that he was my favorite editor ever, you know, and it was true because, like, he made it happen, you know. I'm very grateful for that. And then I met Klaus, and, you know, it's magical. This is one of those things that, and actually there's many other things about like that, but that makes our job, like, so magical, you know, because, like, I guess that every one of us grew up as a reader, and if we have the chance of becoming creators, professional creators, you know, that there's always, like, something, like, even meeting someone that would fulfill, you know, something they would never dreamed of when you were a kid. And working with Klaus has been one of those highlights that I, you know, definitely has a special place in my heart.
Yeah, no, I mean, that, like, the second you said Frank Miller, I was like, oh, he you must have just been beyond, you know, just so excited about that. I mean, and Klaus is obviously such an icon, and really defined a lot of what Frank Miller's artwork looked like. Just to jump time a little bit, now, I believe the first Spider-Man story that you illustrated was a Tangled Web issue with Brian Azzarello. Is that sound about right?
And it's called, yeah, correct.
A Tangled Web issue, and I, if memory serves, in that issue was kind of a spotlight on Crusher Hogan, the wrestler who,
yeah.
So, I mean, that was kind of, you know, that story kind of served as a prequel to, you know, obviously Amazing Fantasy 15. So for that to be your first Spider-Man story, to kind of, you know, do a story that spun off, obviously, one of the most famous comic book stories of all time. I mean, what was that like for you? I mean, was that just kind of, I mean, how did that come about? Was that, were you just kind of asked to jump on on the story? I mean, was this... Just explain that to me, because that had to be pretty cool to have that be your first story.
Yeah, it was my first work at Marvel, actually. Axel Alonso was the editor of the book at the time, and he contacted me because I had just done my first two issues of Hellblazer with Brian Azzarello for Vertigo, and he liked those. And so Brian had a story for Tangleweb, and so, like, Axel called me to ask me if I was, you know, interested in doing it. And of course I was interested, because, like, I started over at DC. But then again, like, this was another dream come true, like, doing something for Marvel. So even if it was just one issue, I would have, you know, done something for Marvel. And it's a great story. I think it's one of the most intense and emotional stories I've worked with. With Brian, like, every time we talk about it, like, we still talk about that, like, one of our favorite stories. But and of course, like, looking back at the drawings now, they don't look so good to me. But yeah, it's like more than 10 years ago. But it was an honor to be part of that story, because it's a great story. Like, it's like a whole new point of view on Crusher Hogan. You know, like, he's always been seen like the villain, like, you know, like the bad guy. Like, but that story completely revolutionizes what the way you look at him. And I think it's what Brian is genius. So I think he really updated himself with that story. So that's another thing that has a special place in my heart too. And it was fun though, because Spider-Man doesn't appear, but in the last page and with no costume. So, you know, like, everyone was, you know, making fun of me, because, like, yeah, of course you're drawing Spider-Man, but then you didn't in the end. And of course I didn't. But I, you know, after that book, like, I was invited by so many shows over the world, and I remember that everybody was asking me Spider-Man. And that's why, you know, like, I got kind of, like, fed up with drawing Spider-Man, you know, because, like, so many ways I was like, man, like, is it possible to do that on a regular monthly book? And of course it is. Like, and actually, in 2011 when I started actually working on the Amazing Spider-Man title with Dan, I would have never thought that I would still be here now after 3 years and a half, you know, and still having fun and having lots of fun with it. Like, I probably say, well, of course, I'm going to take the chance and work on Spider-Man, but maybe it's, I don't know, it's going to last. Maybe they're just going to have me on the book for a couple of issues or more. But no, actually, on the other hand, it's been a fantastic ride, and I hope it doesn't stop because I'm having fun and I love what Dan does. So, you know, like, this is definitely a thrilling ride for me.
You're talking about revolutionary stories. You know, the whole superior concept was just so unique and different and controversial to some degree, too. So when you found out that you were going to be on the rotation for that book with Umberto Ramos and Ryan Stegman, I mean, first of all, you know, what did that mean to you to be on the rotation? But also, what did you think of the superior concept when the whole thing was pitched to you?
It's funny. I actually got no clue that was happening until I got that email, you know, talking about what was going to happen. And I thought, well, this is crazy. But of course, like, I would trust my editor and I trust Dan because, like, I really love what he does. And I told you immediately since the very first script that working on those stories made me remember, or like, reminded me of the Golden Age stories that I read, like the Lee Ditko, the Lee Romita, you know, the Golden Age of comics when I got so, you know, into it. And so, like, I had total faith in the man. Like, As crazy as it might sound at the time, I thought, well, I want to give it a try. And it was already interesting to me, the fact that it would be like a darker Spider-Man, because I'm usually more into dark characters, you know, like Dark Knight and Wolverine and Batman and everything. But I thought that the chance of playing with Peter and the fact that it would be a little bit more extreme, a little bit more, you know, free to do whatever he wanted to do, totally, basically, that made me think that there were chances of like that becoming something very interesting and very different from what has been done, from what had been done before. And it was like that. And I'm happy, you know, I'm like totally like since the very beginning of Superior, like we've been to shows and like there's so many people that came to us. Like I've been to a show with Dan and other fans and everything, but that came to us and told us that they began reading comics with that book. And that's always like a positive sign to me. Like even like a single reader, a single new reader that jumps in for the industry, if it's you're doing, I think it's a blessing because it might end up like reading comics forever. I mean, that's what happened to me. And it was a fun ride. It was great. It was actually very interesting. Like I would never even dreamed of like working on the final chapter on Goblin Nation. You know, I didn't even know how many issues would that last. You know, like and that's also, you know, one of the closest things that is to read comics to me nowadays, because like I've been working so much that it's really hard to enjoy comics. So not knowing exactly what goes on the next issues is kind of like a guilty pleasure to me. So it was good to be along on the ride, and it's good that it was always been like a book that had great critiques and great reviews and sold really well. So it's a run that I'm very proud of.
I have to ask you with Goblin Nation. I mean, what was it like to find out you were doing a Green Goblin story? Because that's got to be like if you are even somewhat a fan of Spider-Man. I mean, to be doing a Green Goblin story, it's got to be the best thing ever, right?
Yeah. It's like totally unexpected, and on the other hand, like so cool. And Green Goblin, one of my favorite villains. But so the thing is that you do Goblin Nation, and then you think, well, you know, what else can that be? And then you get like Spider-Verse, you know. So that's the thing with Dan and Nick Lowe, the editor, and then the whole Marvel team on Spider-Man. It's that. And Spider-Man also has like a cast of villains that's one of the best, together with Batman, I think. And so like Goblin was, the Green Goblin has always been like one of my favorite villains. But then there are so many, and you can do so many cool things with the right story, with that cast. That, you know, like it felt great, but at the same time I was like, give me some more. Like I can't wait to hear what's up next. And then we got Spider-Verse, which is something totally epic, which I'm working on. That's one of the most epic things ever. So super, super cool and super happy with it.
Yeah. I mean, how much research have you had to do for Spider-Verse with all these alternative Spider-Men from different countries and universes and all of this? I mean, you know, is that's got to be tough. You know, I mean, especially those two superior prologue issues you did where, I mean, there was like 10 different guys on some pages, you know, from all over.
So, well, that was nothing compared to what I'm doing now. Yeah. No, I mean, it's not as much as the research, because the office is like sending references and everything. It's about trying to, you know, to be loyal to every single one of them, because they're all different, you know. And sometimes, you know, there are so many on the page that not only you have to try to make them look unique, you know, because Spider-Ham is different than Spider-Man India and everything, not only because of the way they look, but also because of the way, you know, they act and talk and the body moves and everything. But yeah, the most difficult thing is like being, you know, paying attention to details, you know, and trying to make everything work on the page. But, you know, it's kind of like terrifying when you have to start a page, but once the page is done, it's beautiful. So, you know, it rewards you of the artwork, basically.
What's it like process-wise working with someone like Dan Slott? Because, you know, I talked to Humberto Ramos a while ago, and, you know, he kind of talked how, you know, Dan, you know, he just has these huge ideas, and, you know, which could make for these very, you know, complex images in the comic, you know, lots of action, lots of characters. Obviously, you're experiencing that with Spider-Verse. So, I mean, what's the process like with Dan? I mean, how much back and forth is there? Does he just deliver you the script and tell you to do what you can, or how does he plot it for you? I'm just curious what Dan's process is with his artists.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dan is unstoppable. He keeps on having ideas, and like if you talk to him, like it really keeps on like flowing, like ideas, like very good ideas, one after the other. It's unbelievable. And he's one of the few writers, from what I know, from what I've been told, that works the Stan Lee way, you know, like so not from a full script, but usually sends the plot, which is already divided in pages and panels most of the times, and then he has the dialogues later after seeing the page. So, you know, depending on the scene in the book, or depending on the time, like, you could have, like, a very detailed script anyway, only the dialogue is missing. Or you could have, like, especially for the action scene, something which is looser, and then it's basically up to me, you know, because, like, yes, he and the editor have confidence in me to be able to make it. And, well, and it's not so difficult. I mean, there's not so much back and forth, just like basically getting the script done, like turning pages in, and if there's anything to change, you know, like I'll change it. But most of the times, like, you know, luckily enough, I nail everything down. So, you know, it's pretty easy. In the very beginning, it was a little bit, you know, slower as a process, because like I wanted to turn in layouts first so that, you know, they would, you know, pay attention to the fact, you know, like make sure that I would leave enough space for dialogues and everything. But now in the end, like, you know, I'm just like skipping the process now and mostly turning in like pencils directly. And even if I have to redo something, I redo it. But it's been like 3 years and a half now that I'm working with Dan. And so I think that we're in that phase in which there's a good chemistry between us. And so like it's very hard to, you know, to do things that are not like good, you know, in one direction or the other. At least that's what I think.
How has working with Dan allowed you to kind of evolve as an artist? Because, I mean, I think I mentioned this earlier, you know, within, like, kind of the Spider-Man fan community, I know a lot of people really started taking notice of you during Goblin Nation. I mean, there was just a lot of really cool layouts and designs throughout those issues. And you know, it just, I mean, from someone who's been following you for a while, it just seemed like there was an evolution. And I mean, was that just something that just comes naturally with time? Or do you think, you know, kind of having these big stories to work with Dan has kind of pushed you a little bit harder? I mean, what do you owe up to that?
Well, probably all of it. It's really hard to say from my point of view, you know, if there's an evolution or not. Well, maybe you can see it afterwards, but not while you're doing it. I was totally aware of the fact that it was like an epic story, and epic and action and grim and gritty, and those are the things that made me excited. I'm usually trying to do my best with every page and every story, but it's maybe something that kicks in and without noticing. It's not like a very conscious process, you know, like evolving. Otherwise, you would do it sooner, I think. But I was noticing the same thing, like reading reviews and everything. And I'm looking back at the pages. Yeah, I think there's been an evolution. And I really can't say what happened. But I think it has something to do with the fact that the scope of the story was pretty big and epic. And especially, you know, not only the big action scenes, but also like the most intense moment, you know, like when Otto gives up, you know, and Peter is back, you know, those kinds of moments, you know, together with all the buildup and the city in flames and the goblins and everything. It all, you know, merged together to become something, you know, probably, you know, unique. But I can hardly, you know, remember like paying attention to that. I was just like trying to, you know, meet my deadlines and do a kick-ass job as much as possible. And as always, you know, so there was nothing different from my usual approach. It was maybe something natural that kicked in, you know, without me realizing it. That's at least that's what I think.
Hey, no, whatever works, because it's been awesome, and it's continued to be awesome. One of the things that we've noticed, just in terms of how you lay out the pages, and you know, we don't see this a lot in comics, is you like to use like a lot of like vertical slices and how you break up the panels. I mean, do you get that idea from anywhere, or is this just something you thought you'd try and you've kind of run with?
Well, I've been doing those since the very beginning. I started out professionally in Italy in 97 with a self-published book called Boneless that was later on translated in America by Image. But I think I got that from Chris Baccalo. We say Baccalo in Italy, but Chris Baccalo. I have always been a big fan of his work since the Vertigo days, and I think he was the first one, if I remember well, that I saw like doing that kind of layout. And I always thought it was like very cool and very different. And of course, it's not a layout that you can apply to every page. But usually when I read a script and I see that there's a right amount of panels, usually it has to be 3 to 5, you know, nothing more than that. Sometimes you can do it. But if it works, like there's something that clicks and I'm trying to, you know, visualize that panels, you know, in that kind of layout and grid. And if it works, I usually do it. I try not to over abuse it, of course, because it's not something that you can do in every issue or so often. But if it works, I think it gives like the page something pretty different from the others. So, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I got that from Chris Pacello. So it's nothing new.
Well, it's still pretty unique. It's not used a lot, even if you got it from somewhere else. So do you have like a kind of a set group of Spider-Man characters that you just really love, or the opposite, don't like drawing? You know, it's funny, we talked to Mark Bagley a while ago, and you know, this is the guy who created Carnage, and you know, when we asked him this question, he said, "I hate drawing Carnage. He's impossible to draw, and it's too much red." So I'm just curious, is there anyone that you love or don't love illustrating that you've done or wish to do?
It's funny, like I think I drew my first Carnage sketch here in Argentina, like this past weekend, and it was cool actually. Well, maybe it's because it was only one, I don't know. No, there's nothing, you know, that particularly stands out in something that I like or don't like in terms of like the cast. But yeah, I definitely have some favorites. Like Venom is always cool to draw, and J. Jonah Jameson is another favorite of mine. Mary Jane and, you know, the Vulture, Hammerhead, you know, there's so many, you know, like I said before, so many cool characters, even like both visually and, you know, like story wise that there's, it always feels like a blessing, you know, as a fan, you know, to be able to draw even a single panel with that, you know, so. For sure there's no character that I hate drawing. And actually the cool thing would be, you know, being able in the future to draw as many as possible, you know. I'm pretty sure that I didn't draw even but a glimpse of the whole cast, but it would be cool to get to draw a lot, you know, of the Spider-Man cast.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing we've noticed is when you draw women, you have like you really do a good job of like bringing out a variety of different, you know, body types and features and that and whatnot when you draw women. I mean, is this a conscious thing that you do to kind of distinguish all the women from each other? I mean, because, you know, this is obviously something that a lot of people are paying increasingly attention to in the industry. So I'm just curious what your, you know, what your process is with that.
Again, there's nothing so, you know, difficult, you know, it's not something that I, but, yeah, it's something, it's probably something that I do very, very easily and very naturally. So it's a thank you for saying that. I mean, I'm happy to, you know, to learn that, but it's I try to pay attention to details and that's it. But yeah, it's I try to, you know, women are maybe more difficult, you know, to draw than men, because they usually, male artists have a hard time drawing women and the other way around. But, you know, after a while, I think it's you pay just a little more extra time in that and it's fine.
Cool. Well, Giuseppe, we're gonna wrap with a final question here that we like to ask creators when they come on the show. It's a big catch-all question. So what does it mean to you to be a Spider-Man artist?
I think I could sum it up with something like, with great power comes great responsibility. Well, I like to think of that. It's something, you know, unique. Like I read once something that Stan Lee wrote about, like, being, you know, a Spider-Man artist is one of the toughest thing ever, you know. And, well, I try not to think too much about that, but about the fact that I'm blessed and happy and lucky to be able to do it. So, but yeah, I realized, because he's such an iconic character and everybody knows it all over the world, that it's really important to do a good job with it. So that's why, you know, it takes great responsibility to be a Spider-Man artist. But I mean, so far so good.
Well, definitely. Well, Giuseppe, thank you again so much for taking a few minutes out to talk to us.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Special thanks again to Giuseppe Camuncoli for coming on our show. It really meant a tremendous amount of us for you to come on, and you know, we're glad to give you this interview. If you like Amazing Spider Talk, of course, you can rate and review our show either on iTunes or on Stitcher. Just search on Amazing Spider Talk or on Spider-Man. We'll come up pretty quickly. And when you're there, give us a rating, review us, leave us some feedback, good or bad. We'll read it on the air. We like it when it's good, though, of course. And then if you have any questions you want to ask us or just want to give us feedback on the show, you can also email us at amazingspidertalk@gmail.com. So this is Mark Giannacchio. You, of course, can find me at www.chasingamazingblog.com or on Twitter at ChasingASMblog. You could also find some of my comic book writing on comicbook.com and Comics Should Be Good. And, you know, we don't have Dan here again today, but, you know, we'll still stick with the usual sign-off, which is, with great podcasts, there must also come Amazing Spider-Talk.